well, random, I'm going to introduce. And welcome to Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis, here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, DeAndrew, and tonight my guest is Dwayne Tudall. My guest tonight has been involved in television industry since the late 1980s. He's done editing for such Emmy-nominated shows as Unsolved Mysteries and the first season of Cops. Dwayne eventually began producing, directing, writing, and or editing for over 30 additional television programs, including Ripley's Believe It or Not, Intervention, and the World's Wildest Police Videos, and for the networks such as NBC, Fox, CBS, CNN, HGTV, National Geographic, The History Channel, A&E, UPN, Fine Living, Discovery, PAX, and many more. He has produced, written, and edited for the History Channel program UFO Files. These episodes include UFO Hunters, the original special, not the current series, Hangar 18, Texas Roswell, When UFOs Arrive, UFO Hotspots, and Alien Encounters. Along the way, he was fortunate enough to team up with co-producer John Greenwald Jr. and interviewed some of the best and brightest researchers in the UFO field. Dwayne has started a production company named Mariner Point Productions and is currently in various stages of production on several shows, including a new show about UFOs. Boy, you're a busy man.
Hi, Dee. Yeah, I do get a little overwhelmed sometimes. But it's fun. I get the best job on the planet.
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, you get to go and interview and investigate all these stories and get to know the people involved in them.
It's the nice thing about what I get to do is I get to meet a lot of these people that really research, first in the UFO field, a lot of these people who really research this stuff, who have lived this stuff, not just somebody who sees a light in the sky, which that's interesting, but people like Ted Phillips, Dan Friedman, Scott Ramsey, you know, people like that you get fortunate enough to actually go to their house or spend a day with them and really get to know them, not just as a researcher, but as a person. And you understand that, you know, this person is not a crazy person. This person is somebody who really has gone into the details of what they are looking into. And I have to respect that.
I can question, I bet everybody's thinking, and I know I am. What got you into doing, Unsolved Mysteries?
Well, TV, I've always, even when I was a kid, I had an interest in making movies and TV. I used to make short films when I was in 6th and 7th grade on my little Super 8 movie camera, and a lot of them happened to be little stories about aliens or something like that, which I always thought was fun. And, you know, growing up, I like everybody, and I'm in my mid-40s right now, and you know, in the early 70s, you had the Eric von Daniken books, Gods from Outer Space, Chariots of the Gods, and I was always interested in that. And getting into TV, I happened to be fortunate enough to get onto Unsolved Mysteries, which was a great show, an NBC show, top 10, top 15 show, and they covered a lot of great stories, whether it's abductions or UFOs, things like that, crop circles, and they didn't always have the answer, but it was nice because what they did was they'd have experts from both sides, not just the skeptics saying this isn't true because I don't believe it's true, but people who've actually looked into whatever the stories they're covering. And I liked that debate back and forth, and that sort of thing intrigued me, that why aren't more TV documentaries, whether it's about UFOs or anything, more like that. So that's where I got interested in that stuff. And I just happened to stumble into, by lucky chance, working for a lot of great companies and Cops. I happened to work for that company when they started doing Cops and things like that. So it was very fortunate. I mean, I kind of aimed, you know, but at the same time, I had a lot of lucky breaks. So.
Well, I don't know about a lot of people, but I think the first time I ever heard of the Rendlesham Forest incident was on Unsolved Mysteries.
Probably, yeah. Unsolved really covered a lot of things. That was one of them. Another one was, Roswell. Roswell was really, I guess you're familiar with how some of that got covered, but Stan, who is, I don't know whether to call him the godfather of Roswell, or he told me he doesn't like to be called the grandfather of Roswell. He likes Godfather much better, and that's much more polite. And he was somebody who I think contacted the people at Unsolved Mysteries back when I was there, and they did the story, and it got huge ratings, and the rerun it got even better ratings, and it really kind of opened the book on a case that really had been forgotten like that. And if it wasn't for Stan going to Unsolved, it probably would not have gotten as big of a showcase as it did. And you're absolutely, the Rendlesham Forest one, the Cash Landrum story.
Oh, yes, I'd forgotten that one.
Yeah, that's a great, that's one of my favorite stories. And I think if anybody is really looking for a good UFO story, there's a book, John Schussler wrote that book called The Cash Landrum Incident. And it really details about Betty and... if anybody doesn't know this story, basically, in a nutshell, on December 29th, 1980, Betty Cash, Vicki Landrum, and Colby Landrum were traveling in Texas, and they saw this giant... I can't remember how big it was, like 75 feet tall thing that went over the highway they were on, not highway, the back road they were on, spitting out flame. I think Vicki was the one that got out of the car, but they all got some sort of damage to them. They had burns, they were throwing up that night, one or two of them started losing hair. It was, you know, they had physical effects because of this, because of the radiation poisoning based on this thing, and a bunch of helicopters came away and sort of chased it away. Now, there was really no explanation for this. The road was burnt there. The road actually ended up getting taken out of that area and repaved. And that to me, if you've got physical evidence that something happened, that's an interesting story. So I'm, you know, and Unsolved was one of the first that really covered that. So I have a lot of respect for Unsolved. I think they did, and I think they're going to do some more episodes, and I think they just do amazing stuff, personally. Maybe a little biased on my side, but.
Oh, well, I personally enjoyed the show because they did cover such a wide range of topics.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Whether it's somebody being abducted, ghosts, the paranormal, Loch Ness Monster, those kind of things. They really, cryptozoology, they would go into that sort of thing. They really, it was nice because you could watch any episode and you could get five or six different stories all on different subjects. You know, a murder, an ancient mystery, whatever it was. And, you know, that to me was what TV should be if you're going to look into paranormal, is that kind of stuff. And again, high production values, great writers, great producers. It was one of my favorite jobs ever, literally.
Oh,
I worked there for 4 years.
Like I said in one of our phone conversations, I have the box set of Unsolved Mysteries UFO segment.
There's some great ones
in
there.
Every once in a while, I'll pop one in and, you know.
That's a great one. I have not bought that. I really should. I sometimes look back at my work, and I didn't do it. You know, I worked there for 4 years, so. But it's sometimes interesting to re-see your work after, you know, two decades or so.
Oh, and one thing, I thought it was kind of interesting that you mentioned the Cash Landrum case. The Cash Landrum case happened not exactly at the same time, but on the same date as one of the nights of the Rendlesham Forest.
Right, I think it was one day after the Rendlesham Forest thing. Yeah, I know. There's a lot of interesting coincidences when you have stories like that, when you start to look at a calendar. And that's definitely, both those stories are great stories, and the fact that it happened around the same date or one day apart is really... You know, you start to wonder is this a coincidence or is there something that's happening? And I like that. The another case like that is the Socorro, New Mexico, in 1964, and I know I've seen your list of people you've talked to, so you've talked to Ted Phillips about this one, but there was also sightings of a similar craft within days of that in New Mexico also. And I find that, you know, again, very interesting when you have multiple viewings of a similar craft. So that makes it a little more difficult to say this isn't happening. I'll give you a great example. The best example I have of that is one of the shows we did for, I'm jumping ahead of myself, but I work on a show called UFO Files, as you mentioned. And we did a whole episode called Texas is Roswell. And that's about the case from 1897 in Aurora, Texas.
Aurora, yes.
And if you're familiar with it, it's this ship was seen in the air in over, I think it was 24 states by thousands of witnesses over the course of six months to a year. This thing would have been seen in the air. Now, the odd thing about this is it's being seen in the air at a time when we don't have anything in the air. We weren't flying till the early part of the next century. It was 5-6 years later that we were flying. So there really wasn't anything in the air, and yet the same object was being seen. Now, let's say you have, of the 100% of people seeing it, let's say 98% of them are hoaxes. Now, let's just speculate for that. You still have 10% or 2% that is unexplainable, and that's interesting to me. And you have what happened in Aurora. It crashed into a farm, supposedly exploded. Some of the pieces fell down a well, and pieces of metal were found and tested. It was in the newspapers that an alien was in a ship, and the alien was buried in a local cemetery. You know, that's okay. You've got countless witnesses to some of this stuff. I'm intrigued. Again, if it turns out to be false, okay, that's still something worth looking into, and that's what intrigues me. Those kind of stories.
Oh yeah, and all the intrigue that's still going on with that story, the moving of the headstone of the alien.
Right.
They not allowing anybody to uncover the well and retrieve any of the metal that was thrown down the well.
Right. Let me give you a little background on it. I actually went to Aurora. I was producing that with John Greenwald, who is another UFO researcher. He's sort of the go-to guy for Freedom of Information Act documents. I don't know if you're familiar.
Oh, the Black Vault man himself.
Yes, the Black Vault, exactly. BlackVault.com. The BlackVault.com for anybody looking his stuff up. An amazingly talented guy, and we got a chance to go down there. And I don't know if people have been to Aurora much, but it really is a small town. It's the sort of town that has the welcome to Aurora and you're leaving Aurora sign on the same post. It's very, if you're driving, you're going to miss it if you look the other way. But the cemetery is sort of in the middle of town, and we got permission to shoot part of our show in the cemetery, and we interviewed Jim Mars, who not only a big conspiracy buff for the Kennedy assassination, but also wrote Alien Agenda and is a big knowledgeable reporter when it comes to the Aurora crash. He lives just outside of there, about a half an hour out of there. But he talked about this. Well, we were able to go into the cemetery, and we found out where the marking was. Now, the headstone is a little deceiving because the headstone was never big. And I think people need to understand that when you think of a headstone, you think of this huge headstone. But it's really more a stone with a alien ship chiseled into it. I don't know how official it was, but it was stolen. And they do refuse to let people dig up the area, which is kind of unfortunate because that would kind of answer things. But the reason they gave us is because people back in the day had smallpox and things like that, and they don't want to dig that stuff up and have it sort of, you know, brought back out. And also people don't want to have grandma, you know, her grave excavated. You know, I sort of understand that.
This is true because I don't think anybody knows the exact spot where this being is supposedly buried.
We were told around the area there's a tree that it's near this tree, and so we were kind of in the, you know, 20 feet radius of this where it would be. But that said, it's a huge cemetery, and who knows? You know, it could easily be, you know, you could end up stumbling onto a grave that you didn't need to. And you know, does anybody really want to have their ancestors kind of dug up for an investigation about UFOs? Probably not. You know, and the well itself has been sealed And the owner of the property wouldn't let us on the property. He never answered any phone calls. So we went down there. We actually were able to get onto the neighbor's property and see the well. But, again, there's no way of getting down there. It's an intriguing story. I think there's some issues I have with it. I don't know what would have happened to all the wreckage. So I don't know. At least if nothing else, I think it's one of these stories worth looking into.
Oh, I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. Quick question for you.
Yes.
In working with the UFO-related stuff, did you get fully acquainted with these cases, a part of your preparing for them, or were you already partially familiar with them?
Let me give you a little background on the growing up. Like I said, I was really intrigued with UFOs, but then I stopped. I didn't continue on with it. And when I started back, I was editing, and stumbled onto editing one or two of these shows, and I started thinking, this is really an interesting subject and can be done in a fun way. And I got a chance to work on one when UFOs arrive, and that's the one we actually interviewed John Greenwald on, and I was editing that. And then I started working on another one called The Gray's Agenda. And The Gray's Agenda was all about why would the Grays be coming here? Unfortunately, our producer on that one was really not just a skeptic, because I'm a skeptic on these things, but I'm an open-minded skeptic. You know, bring me some proof, bring me some evidence, and I will shift my opinion on this. I'm not somebody who looks up in the sky and sees a light and thinks that's got to be a UFO. I want to know more about it, but at the same time, I'm not so closed about this that I can't think that something's out there. I've seen so much evidence that there's something happening. I can't deny that there's something that I can't explain. But anyway, this producer not only didn't he agree with the subject matter, he kind of went out of his way to disprove the storyline, the Grays Agenda, by asking people, do the Grays exist? And my thought was, okay, if you're going to do this, at least ask the question, what is the Grays Agenda? Oftentimes he never even asked that question. And he got to interview a number of people that he had followed up on these things, because it was obvious what his agenda was with the show. And I think that the show didn't turn out as well as it could. And my thought is, if you're going to do a show about UFOs, you can't really tick off your audience, because they're not going to watch the next week. You know, there's a lot of people out there that want to see a good, honest show about UFOs, and they'll accept if some of these cases aren't true. You know, people are not going to be so closed-minded that they won't accept. But if you're going to be going into it and saying there's no proof, and then starting from that point, people aren't going to enjoy that. You know, a lot of the people that watch these shows are people that really want to know more. And it's easy to interview a person with a tinfoil hat and play off the fact that he's crazy. But you go to other researchers that are really in the know, like Stanton Friedman, Dennis Balthazar, Ruben Oriarte, Jim Mars, Ryan Wood, Ann Druffel, Richard Dolan, John Schuessler, Walt Andrus, Peter Robbins. You've got a lot of people that really have done research and can show you, here's physical evidence, here's proof, here's evidence that you could take to court. And it bothered me. So when we got finally a chance to actually produce my first show on UFOs, it was the episode we did called UFO Hunters. And did you ever see that one?
Yes, I did.
What do you think?
I thought it was well done.
Thank you. Good. It was. What the funny thing was, when and John Greenwald was also working on that one with me, and we laughed at the end of it because we realized we just did a UFO show that interviewed probably a dozen experts on this, and not one skeptic. We tried not to do it. It was about the people that do the researching, and we thought, why should we have a skeptic on there? It didn't make sense to have, you know, your Nichols or one of the other guys, just the skeptic for hires. You know, so didn't the Schumer, is that his name? I think his name is Schumer.
The skeptic.
You didn't have to have, you know, your standard skeptic. So it was fun because we got to have a cross-section of all these different people, including Dr. Lear, Nick Redfern, Nick Pope, a lot of people who really know this stuff, and them talking about these actual cases and what was involved. I find that to me more fascinating. If I was going to do a show about plumbers, I wouldn't have to have somebody that doesn't believe in indoor plumbing. You know, I could just do a show about plumbers. Same, I thought with UFOs, you can do that. And I like the fact that we were able to do an episode that did not have a skeptic on it. So, and people seem to respond to it. I mean, in fact, so much so that the History Channel did a spinoff of the show, and so did the Sci-Fi Channel, which I have nothing to do with either one, though. It is flattering that they decided, well, we like these shows so much that we're going to not copy the premise necessarily, but copy the name and copy the idea. Well, good for them. You know, I think that's great.
And speaking of skeptics, who are some of the skeptics that you have encountered, and what are your thoughts on like, the average skeptic?
I think most of the time, the average skeptic is an uninformed person. And like I said, I go into the subject of, I personally feel I'm a skeptic, but I'm an open-minded skeptic. I think you have certain people that their job is just to say no. A lot of people, it's a matter of, how do I explain this? It's a matter of what your idea of the universe is. And if you believe that this doesn't exist, if you believe there's not life out there, then of course UFOs don't exist. It's funny because somebody was telling me one time, they said, I believe in UFOs, but I don't believe in little green men. And I started laughing about that, thinking, so you believe in cars, you just don't believe in drivers. You know, they were like, well, no. They said, well, it could be remote control. Yes. Who would be doing that? You know, I think most UFO reports are probably fake. Or not fake, but a mistaken identity or a, you know, something that it can be explained. I honestly think probably 98 to 99% of UFO sightings can be explained in some terrestrial way. But there's always that 1%, and that's what intrigues me, is that 1% of cases where there's multiple witnesses, where you have imprint evidence on the ground, or you have physical evidence, or somebody got hurt, or you have photographic evidence that can be studied. That is something that I think more attention should be focused on. You know, that to me is intriguing.
That's what the coinciding with Ted Phillips and his Trace case were.
Oh, Ted's the king. Ted is my hero. And I've been, like I said, very fortunate to have spent time with Ted. We actually both just spoke in Aztec back in March, and I got a chance to hang out with him again and meet his team now. He's got a full team of people doing this with him, who are all great guys. But I've been to Ted's house a couple times, and he and John Grewell and I traveled to Warren, Minnesota, up in to investigate a case from 1979, I think it was, where Deputy Val Johnson, a police officer, his car got hit by a mysterious thing at night. And again, physical evidence on the car. There was some, not goo on the car, but there's a lot of things that like damaged the car that did not make sense. Himself,
windshield.
Yeah, exactly. Windshield got busted out. You've seen that, and he, his watch and his clock in the car, 14 minutes different than time normally. Well, I can't explain that. That's a very odd thing that both of them would have stopped for 14 minutes. You know, he got burns in his eyes, what they call welder burns. Welder's burn. You know, that's okay. You've got physical evidence, you've got physiological evidence, you know, things that happened to his body. It's kind of hard to deny that something happened. An officer of the law would probably not risk his entire career to claim he saw a light in the sky. That doesn't make sense. So again, let's look into something like that. Let's investigate. So we took Ted up there, and Ted was able to see the car for the first time, and he had a kick with that. We had just a blast. Ted, I can't say enough good things about Ted Phillips and his research, and I wish more people, first off, I wish he'd write a book. Second off, I wish more people would pay attention to the kind of research he does, because he is paving the way. You know, he trained in J. Allen Hynek. He's one of these guys that just knows his stuff.
I've had him on my show, and yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
The guy knows his stuff inside out, upside down.
Yeah. I saw his name on the on your show. I actually the day I got the email from you asking about doing this, I was sitting there with Ted when I got that email. So I asked him about that. So he said, "Oh yeah, I did her show." So I was like, "Okay, good enough for me." You know. So
I have to thank him next time I talk to him.
Ted's a great guy. There's certain people out there that I have infinite respect for. Ted is one. John Schussler, who used to head up MUFON. Who else? Like I said, Stan Friedman. People like that really put it all out there. And, you know, kind of the guys that you know, you can throw them something and they're going to knock it out of the park with their information. You know, I would hate to go up against any of these guys in a debate.
Oh, you and me both. I mean, you know, I know a lot about the subject, but a little bit about this one, a little bit of that one, you know.
Sure.
But not the detail that a lot of these other people out there do on their chosen aspect, I guess you could say, of
sure.
study.
Right. And I've actually been very fortunate since I started doing these things. I've really gotten to meet a lot more people. And, you know, some of the people I've gotten to spend time with, like I said, in Aztec, I got to meet Tim Good, who I'd never met before, and he is a great guy. Several of the people down there, the Aztec case is great, and some of the people down there I got to meet were very, you know, it was fun. It was half the people I knew before, and the other half was I was looking forward to meeting, so that was great speaking there. And then I went to Roswell last year. I didn't speak there, but I went down there because Greenwald was speaking, and thought it'd be fun, and got to meet a bunch more people that, you know, Bruce McAbee, those kind of people that you think really do some great research. And you've had Bruce on your show also, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's there's a lot of informed people out there. Unfortunately, when you watch the news, oftentimes it turns out insulting. I don't know if you watched the Dateline special the other night.
Yeah.
I turned it off halfway through it. Because it was just, it ended up being, what did you think of it?
Well, the actual case reports themselves were okay. It
sure.
was the stupid, silly remarks that the host of
right.
the show
right.
made
right.
that I found, you know, we refer to it as the giggle factor.
Right, exactly. And it's very common. As every report, whenever we'd be traveling for our show coming into town and we'd get local press or something like that when the History Channel would be coming to town, it would say, UFO Files beams down to Warren, Minnesota or something, and you're just sitting there going, of course people are not going to believe if you're going to make us look like fools. You know, and the other thing I see about that is you have a convention where you have, and I'll give you, Aztec was a great example. You have scholars, you have several people who have really in the, you know, have researched this for 40 years, 40 plus years. And for the article in the local paper, what they wrote about it was they interviewed a psychic who went out to the site and said, this is not the site. I don't feel the vibes of the universe. And the other person they interviewed was you know, somebody else that was the, and I don't want to discourage people from enjoying the subject matter, but if you're actually going to be honest about this and look into it and write about it, at least present the case fairly, as opposed to making it a silly thing. Don't talk about people beating up. Even on the show, the Dateline show we're just talking about, they were saying things like it created a Starfleet of people, you know, information about this, or you know, and you're listening to this.
And, well, and then they flashed to Scotty at the controls, the transporter. I thought
yeah.
that was like, come on.
I don't get that. I don't quite understand why. It can't be, but we've shown that it can be done in a serious way, a serious but fun way. I mean, you can still, I think there's certain shows that not only shows I've done, but shows that I've seen occasionally, that they go, okay, you're getting something out of it. I get some take home. I walk away from this, but I'm not being made to look like a fool. And oftentimes, I feel bad for a lot of the people that do these interviews for these shows, because they'll sit there for a day or even, you know, giving them extra information. And then they watch the show, and the show really cuts them apart and makes them look like they're an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And I you know, after a while, some of the best experts in the field are going to stop doing these kind of shows because people, you know, how often do you want to go on TV and look stupid? You know, usually once. and then that's about it. And I think that these people who do these shows and mislead the experts, I don't like that. I have to admit, I think that there's a real bias. I think most UFO shows, unfortunately, are not very good. You know, I mean, what are your thoughts? Well, you've seen enough of these shows, not my shows, but in general, but just UFO shows in general. What are your thoughts on them?
Well, I've noticed that there is a trend in the giggle factor still there, yes, but it's not so much. The giggle factor is slowly disappearing. I think it's beginning to be portrayed from a neutral standpoint, neither pro nor con, which I think is the way it should be. Let the evidence speak for itself.
And what do you think is causing that?
I think that the shift in the neutral standpoint is because more and more people are beginning to realize that there's something to this. And I almost did a faux pas of something that I personally despise, is the term UFO believers.
Okay.
Making it sound more like a religion.
Right.
It's not a belief system. It's more knowledge, if that makes any sense.
Sure. No,
it's
no.
It's fact, not faith-based.
Sure. I've seen a lot of shows that, you know, I'll give you the best example I can think of, and I know you saw it, the Peter Jennings show a few years ago.
Yes.
The first hour was brilliant TV. I love the first hour. First
I
hour
agree.
Really set it up, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing a show that really is talking about this. And then the second hour starts off with whoever it was, the pilot or something like that, astronomer pilot, all of a sudden seeing a light in the sky and thinking, oh my gosh, what is that? And it turns out to be the moon, and I'm thinking, what astronomer doesn't understand that the moon is up there? And the next hour was just slicing it apart so far, so much, that you thought, oh my God, anybody who believes in this stuff has got to be an idiot.
And it turned it into a debunker's dream.
Exactly. It really was. It was a debunker's paradise. And that's, again, I don't mind a debate, a healthy debate between people. And I feel that on just about any subject. Let's have a healthy, honest, open debate.
Well, and even though if you do get a debate on TV like that, look at the debacle that happened on Larry King Live.
That's Larry King, yeah. You get the debaters are a little louder. And also
vocal, louder?
Yeah, they're a little louder. Yeah, they shout the other one down. The other thing is, a lot of the debunkers have really funny things to say, and I have to commend them on, we had a guy on one of our shows early on that his comment was, you know, I agree with having an open mind, but not so open that your brain falls out. Now, that's a brilliant line.
I have said that line many times myself.
Yeah, but it's a very funny line. It requires no research to be able to throw that line out there. It requires no, history of knowledge of this, but people walk away and remember that line. And unfortunately, the scholars on UFOs are not quite always as good as that. Stan Friedman is exceptional when it comes to this kind of stuff, and he was on the Larry King you're talking about, but you don't have a lot of people out there that really take a stand like that, and it makes it a little tougher, you know. So I think that some of the shows that we've been able to do and have given, you know, some of these guys a great forum for explaining something, and sometimes things can't be explained in 15 seconds. It takes 10 minutes detail. You know, I think that...
Oh, exactly.
You know, I don't know what cases Ted talked about on your show, but he did a case in Delphos, Kansas.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We discussed that one at length.
Okay. I don't want to go into detail then, but it's a brilliant case for anybody. Listen to the other show. Go back in the archives, listen to the Ted Phillips show, and take a look for that, because, yeah, that to me is, again, one of these great cases. Evidence sitting there for 25 years, basically. And somebody getting numb, their leg getting numb. You know, how can you know something's going on there? I can't. But again, I don't know what it is. It could be anything. I don't know. But what I think is, I want to hear all sides, and I want to know what is going on. You know, I don't want to go into this prejudging it. That's just my feeling about it. So,
I,
How did you get interested in this stuff?
Oh, gosh. I was 10 years old.
Yeah?
I was perusing the school library and ran across a copy of Frank Edwards' Flying Saucer, Various Business, and read it. Didn't understand half of what I read. Of course, I was only like 10 years old. But reading all the accounts that he had in there, you know, of all these people and different places and whatnot, it got me hooked. And I've been devouring just about anything else I could get my hands on this subject.
Right.
You know, I have a lot of admiration for all these researchers that spend their own time and money and effort to go out and investigate these. And I'm not talking just, you know, the average Joe Schmo. I'm talking people like Dr. James E. McDonald.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Hynek.
Right.
People now like Bruce McAbee, PhD.
Right.
Dr. Jack Kasher, PhD.
Exactly. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And a lot of these things, these guys don't make big money on this. You know, it's not like they're living in a castle because they've written a book about UFOs. In fact, although they sell, they're still not making huge money off of this stuff. But it is a passion, and they want to get a story and the truth out there. And I don't know how you can't respect that. It's, you know, people that do this stuff and really look into it, I think deserve attention. And analysis. I think really, like Stan said one time, the people that don't believe in this stuff are people that haven't investigated the stuff.
And exactly.
I think it's the most true thing that you could say about this. You know, there's a great book by J. Allen Hynek called The UFO Experience, and it's a scientific book written, I think, in the early 70s, as I recall.
I'd have to go get my copy.
I've got mine right here. Let me take a look. Let me take a look. Give me the exact date of when it was created. Let's see here. 72. And yeah, I think that this is the book. If it wasn't this book, it might have been one of Alan's other books that he came up with, The Close Encounters of the First, Second, and Third Kind. You know,
he actually had a cameo in that movie of all.
Yeah, things. I know. Isn't that great?
I thought it was awesome.
I love the movie.
Well, and then Mr. Lacombe was based on Jacques Vallée.
Exactly.
Who was a co-investigator, I guess you could call it, with Hynek.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, he's written a lot of things, a lot of great stuff. Yeah. And the movie is obviously, I explained to people also, because that was one of the films that really influenced me back then. But I tell people that this is the kind of thing that was done with love of the subject. You know, it was done with respect. Research, the whole story about the cops chasing a UFO is based on a real story.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that stuff is based on things that happen, you know, with minor tweaks to make it work in a movie. But well, how cool is that? You know, and the whole landing thing was based on what airbase was that supposedly that happened on?
Edwards?
Yeah, maybe was it Edwards or was it Holloman? No, it must have been Edwards. I don't remember which one it was, but supposedly there was a case back then of a UFO landing on the Air Force base. And I want to say it was April 26, 1964, but I don't quite recall. I think it was somewhere around there. But anyway, it was one of these things where somebody supposedly landed and there was, you know, some sort of exchange program. Well, again, Spielberg obviously researched this enough and loved the subject to make it a movie that was entertaining, as well as some to people who like the subject matter, you know, little hints to all of us. And I like that. You know, you gotta respect
that. Then he also did a lot of heavy research into abductions for Taken.
Oh yeah, and I never saw Taken. I have to admit, I never saw that. So I heard that was great. I have to admit,
I watched it twice.
Yeah, abductions.
It was really good.
Yeah, abductions are the thing that I haven't quite got my head around yet, mostly because I haven't covered it in a show or anything like that, so I haven't done the research on it. I have no opinion one way or the other.
Maybe that should be your next project.
Well, I've got a number of things lined up. I love the subject. I think the subject is great, and I think that having talked to a number of people that have gone through this, it's always interesting to hear. You know, it's a scary thing. Again, like with sightings of UFOs, I think there's probably a number of them that are probably not accurate. Or, you know, but the ones that are, let's focus on. Let's clear the my thought is on all this stuff. Let's clear the table of all the crap, and let's focus on the good stuff. You know.
Amen.
You know, let's stop. I think so many times people can say, "Well, this whole subject must be fake because look at this. This one case was bad." And you can't write off the whole of ufology because of one bad case. So that's
you. But you have that in any subject you study.
Absolutely, absolutely. Do you think that everything that Einstein did turned out to be accurate? No, you know. But that doesn't make him an idiot. The guy had, you know, Babe Ruth got a lot of home runs. He also struck out or missed it a lot. But let's focus on the home runs and what he did right. You know, let's really focus our time, energy, and money on investigating the cases that deserve our attention, that are worthy of our attention. That's kind of my thought. You know, and that's what I'm hoping we do with our shows. You know, I really hope that we get a chance to... it's funny because the one that we did an episode that was basically almost all about Ted Phillips. And originally the case was called Close Encounters of the Second Kind. We called the show that, but we couldn't, the network didn't think we could get the rights to naming it that. So we ended up naming it, somebody named it Alien Encounters. And we laugh about this because it's a great title except for there were no aliens and no encounters. So other than that.
Well, other than the Socorro.
Well, we did there were aliens and there were, I guess, encounters in it, but it wasn't like they actually had close-up things. Yeah, I guess at Socorro there were some beings that were underneath the craft. But it was, I think, we wanted to call it trace evidence. We also wanted to call it physical evidence because that's really what the show is about. And you could do a show about alien encounters and you could do some really great stories. And the title with it was odd, but... you know, I have to admit, I think the show turned out great. I was really happy with the show. Because you could do a whole series about just Ted, you know.
Oh, yes. I mean, and the man's still out there doing research.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, here just Monday, I believe it was, I was talking with Chuck Stokowski.
Okay.
And he was talking about going out with Phillips to Marley Woods,
yes.
And he was all excited because they had this experiment they wanted to try, and he gave me a little teaser info about it.
Marley Woods is a great case, and I don't know if you guys have talked about this. Probably Ted talked about Marley Woods, didn't he?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so again, listen to the Ted show. But the Marley Woods case is a great case. It's still under investigation. It's still ongoing, multiple sightings by multiple people, with video, with, you know, and in fact, I suggest people go to Ted's website because I know they're selling a video on this stuff where they've investigated some of this stuff, and it's a pretty good video, definitely worth looking into. And his team, he's got a great team of people, and Chuck, is a great guy. I just got an email from him. I think he's going somewhere soon, I forget where it was, but just full of knowledge. These guys... not only full of knowledge, but full of enthusiasm, and you need that. So, you know.
And for those who are in our virtual auditorium, David's getting ready to post, he's looking up Ted's website address and he's going to post it in the room. And it is,
UFOPhysical.com. Yeah. I think it's UFOPhysical.com. Let me look that up when we're talking just to make sure, but I think it's something.
But yeah, he got... got it open on his computer. I can see it.
Okay, yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
For those who had missed Ted, you have to go back to our archives and find him. I don't remember exactly what date he was on offhand, but it's there.
He was in 2007, as I recall.
Yes, I believe so. It was before Christmas. But Ted is just a fascinating individual, just absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
He's got so many cases on file that are trace cases. That's all he does is trace cases. And, you know, I was surprised that there were that many trace cases out there.
Several thousand. And December 1st, 2007 was when you had him on. And I don't want to make this the Ted show because he certainly can speak for himself, but the man is just phenomenal. He's one of these guys. And there's several people out there that like this, but Ted is a man that really has dedicated everything to that. And I think he got out of it for a little bit after Hynek passed away. He got out of it for a little bit, but he's back into it and even more enthusiastic now than he was for a while. And we've used him on, let's say, 3 or 4 shows. He's just a wealth of knowledge, you know, and a great guy to spend time with, and a lot of fun on top of that. Not only, he's not just some science-y nerd guy, he's really a lot of fun, too. You know, we had just it felt like it was a road trip when he and John Greenwald and I went to Minnesota together. Just a lot of fun. I want to do more shows with Ted.
You know, I'll keep my eyes open for him.
Yeah. If I could find a way to have Ted and certain people in every show I do, if I could find a way to have Ted in every show, if I could find a way to have John Schuessler in every show, I'd be a happy man. Be a happy man.
I have a question here that was sent to me by a member in a virtual auditorium.
Okay.
Who wants to know if you have met any abductees, contactees, and any one of them that you thought was genuine.
And again, I don't have a lot of experience with the abductees. And when I speak at the conventions or attend the conventions, I do have people come up to me and talk to me about some of this stuff. But I have to admit, so far I have not done the research into that, so I'm really not the go-to guy for the abduction stuff. I'm open to the idea of some of the stuff, and we've done stories about with Dr. Roger Lear about, you know, some of the implant removal, which some of that comes from some of these people that are abducted. But I personally have not done too much into that stuff. We interviewed Betty, I'm drawing a blank on her last name. Early 1960s, her and her husband traveling.
Betty and Barney Hill.
Hill. I don't know why I want to say Betty White, but it's Betty Hill. We did interview her. I did not. I was actually the producer I was talking about earlier, and her final interview was actually done by the producer, who was really more the skeptic, and he didn't really even ask her great questions. And she's just a woman that you'd want to just squeeze her brain and just listen, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that she's been very fortunate to have a niece like Kathleen Martin, who's a big with MUFON, and she's written the book that just came out a bit ago that I think...
It's called Captured.
Yes. That's right. You put it on your site. It's a good book, and it just talks about a lot of stuff. But I think that, you've got somebody like that that was captured. What a great story she has. I mean, fascinating. You know what her and her husband went through, and I did not unfortunately get to meet her personally, and she passed away soon after the other producer I was working with did the interview. So but I've always been, I have to admit, I remember years ago watching that movie with James Earl Jones on TV and just going, wow, what the hell is this? So yeah.
Have you read the book?
I have only looked through the book. I know because Stan had the book when we were in Aztec, and I looked through it. I know he did the I think he did the foreword for it. Is the book good?
Interrupted Journey? Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I have a copy.
Oh, the original one. Okay, yeah. I did not read the book. That's one of the books. I have so many books that, you know, when the subject comes up, I kind of dive into all these books and try to know as much. My job as a producer is to know everything about the subject. So when I'm asking somebody a question, for an interview, I don't sound like I don't know what I'm talking about. I want to know so that I can ask the proper follow-up questions. You know, I'm sure you watch some of these shows and you see somebody asking a question, even Larry King, and you're thinking and somebody answers, you know, the question, and you're hoping that he asks a follow-up question that clears things up, and he doesn't, or somebody doesn't, and you're just, you're shaking your fist at the TV. You know, you want to have the follow-up question. So I feel like it's in my best interest, in my viewers' best interest, to know anything about these subjects so that if it comes up, I can, you know, I can write about it. So, and, you know, and even little things. You find out little things along the way. I there's so many things I did not know, not just about UFOs, but in general. I've always referred to all people in the military as soldiers, and I was corrected by a Marine one time when I was doing a story on something. And he said, no, soldiers are Army. No, I didn't know that. I always thought soldiers were soldiers, but he said, no, a Marine is a Marine. A Marine is not a soldier. And so you know, going into these things, knowing things, it's very helpful. You know. Now, did you know that?
Well, yes, I'm ex-Navy myself.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. And my mom's Army, my dad's Navy. I didn't know that. No, I just, you know.
Well, in the Navy, you're not a soldier. You're a sailor.
Exactly. That's what my dad said. I told my dad this. He goes, "Oh, I'm a sailor." Oh, okay. I just felt like an idiot. You know. And I know we got another hour coming up. In the next hour, I want to talk to you about when some of the shows we did where we went to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and things like that.
Yeah, that's the meat and potatoes I've been saving for last.
Okay,
this is
good.
For the last hour.
Good, because I have a few things I really want to talk about that stuff.
Okay, we have about a minute, and I need to get a quick shout-out. We have a new batch of listeners out there on UPRN 105.8 FM in New Orleans. I want to welcome everybody in New Orleans that's listening to the show, and welcome to the network. I think you'll enjoy it. And also, we need to be heading for a break. So we'll be back here in a bit with Dwayne Trudell on Eye to the Sky, UFO Synopsis here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. And welcome back to Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis, here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, and also on UPRN 105.8 FM New Orleans. And I'm your host, DeAndre, and tonight we're talking with Dwayne Trudell. Dwayne, we were talking during the break about the Wright-Patterson and the Hangar 18 story.
Mm-hmm. We did an episode for UFO Files about Hangar 18. As a kid, I remember hearing about the stories that there was a warehouse for UFOs, and was always fascinated. So we pitched the idea to the History Channel, and they ran with it. They said, "Yeah, I like the idea of a place that, you know, there's documented evidence that says the Roswell stuff was taken back there." And that was back when it was taken there. It was Wright Field. It wasn't Wright-Patterson Field. Wright-Patterson became there a few years later, but it's an air base in Dayton, Ohio, that is where they take any sort of back engineering, reverse engineering stuff. If we get a Soviet MiG captured one, or if it crashed, they would take it back to Wright-Patterson and reverse engineer it. Well, if you look at things like Project Moondust, a lot of the documents, if people are familiar with Project Moondust, which is the government retrieval organization, Project Moondust and Project Bluefly, were to retrieve space debris that crashed to Earth, whether it's satellites or things like that. Well, an unspoken part of that is unexplained extraterrestrial material in all over the world. So there's documents from Chad, and there's documents from different countries all around the world, parts of Africa, where people from the U.S. team would go there and bring it back, and it would almost always go back to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base for investigation. So when you have documents that say Roswell stuff was taken there, and you have other crafts from other things, whether it's Kecksburg or Aztec or various things, they say a lot of these things end up there. That's a fascinating story. So along the way, what happened was we were able to contact the head of the base, who was a great guy, and he said, "Yeah, I'll be interviewed for your show. The trick is I will not say anything about UFOs." Okay, we were very honest with him and told him his show is called UFO Files, but he said, "I will not say anything about UFOs technically. I will talk about what the purpose of the base is," which is, you know, a lot of things, but it involves the reverse engineering as well. But we sat down with him, and he was great. We sat down with a base historian, who was also an excellent guy. He would talk a little bit about it, but didn't want to on camera be talking about this stuff. And again, probably because a lot of these shows would rip them apart, make them look like fools, and things like that. And it's not our goal. Our goal is to present a story. And so John Greenwald and I were able to go and actually spend the day on the base. And there were parts that they said, we don't want you to videotape this area. This is an area that we'd prefer you not tape. National security. And there was no question when we were told this, you don't videotape it. My thought about disclosure and things like that is I'm all for disclosure as long as it doesn't affect national security. I don't want to be involved with something that's bringing down or making us weaker. I'm an American, and I'm very proud of what I do. The subject of UFOs is fascinating, but not worth causing, you know, national security issues about, for me. Other people have different opinions. This is just my personal opinion. But we were able to get a tour of the entire base, and they asked us, is there anything on this base that would be your dream shot? Is there anything that you'd really like to have video of? And my comment was, the cryogenic chambers with the aliens in it would be great. And they said, well, that's not... First off, that doesn't exist. So, but it was great. People were so nice, and they were so open with us. And, you know, we got the tour of the base. We were shown, this is Building 18. There's not a Hangar 18, supposedly, but there's a Building 18. And there's a couple other buildings like that. And this is where these rumors supposedly happened. So they're pretty good about everything. You know, I can't say a bad thing about them. Very happy with the somewhat access they gave us. And on top of that, we were able to interview a man named Robert Collins. Robert Collins wrote a book called Exempt from Disclosure, a book about military and aliens, and specifically Wright Patterson. And he actually worked on the base for a while. And has schematics of the underground underground chambers and things like that. And so we were able to interview him. And he had some fascinating stories. So overall... we're able to get some people and some things that I think that had not been shown on TV before. Again, we're not showing the cryogenic chambers, but we're having people talk about what they've seen and what they know of, and you gotta love that, as far as I'm concerned.
I'll just kind of a little aside here. I love the show Ghost Hunters on Sci-Fi Channel.
Sure.
And here recently, they did a show where they were invited to write Pat.
Okay.
And as they were walking through a section of office cubicles, one of the guys stopped and looked at a desk, and you could see him reach down and pick something up, and he holds up his foot, and he says, somebody's burning the midnight oil, and it's a book about Roswell.
Oh, that's funny.
At Wright-Patt Air Force Base. I thought that was rather humorous.
Well, I can tell you that the people there do have a sense of humor about, they know that the stories about this stuff are existing. Some of the people we met with had little tchotchkes of aliens on their desks, or like an inflatable alien doll, or things like that. They're just kind of fun, kind of as a goof. You know, they weren't angry about the UFO stuff. They just said we don't want to talk about it on camera.
I think one of the reasons why, you know, the Hangar 18 legend, mythos, or whatever you want to call it. Or fact or fiction, because I still have some of my doubts.
Sure.
You know.
Sure.
But when you consider that Wright-Patterson was the home base for the Air Materiel Command.
Absolutely.
The Foreign Technologies Division.
Absolutely.
And Project Blue Book.
Yep. That's the other thing is people don't understand that Project Blue Book was conducted almost exclusively from Wright-Patt. And what's interesting to me about that, and we went to the actual office where that was, and it really was like a two-room building. I mean, it really was this really kind of sad little area. And you think all the research was done by that. And really, the Blue Book team was probably about four or five people.
At the most.
Yeah, it really was never a big, you know, when you hear Blue Book, you think, oh, it must have been this whole, you know, core of people. And it was, you know, it was a tiny core of people. And without much of a budget, they didn't, you know, it's almost like they didn't want them to succeed. You know,
well, when I had his name right there on my head. He was a former head of Blue Book. He was head of Blue Book twice. Ruppelt.
Yes.
he went to go investigate the UFOs over the Capitol building in 52.
Right.
And was told, hey, you know, if you don't get back to the base, you're going to be AOL, and, or AWOL, I'll get it right.
AWOL, yeah.
AWOL, and, you know, no, you can't have any transportation while you're here unless you pay for it yourself, you know, which meant taking a bus or a cab.
Sure.
They wouldn't even give him a staff car.
It's sad. It's really, you know, and I know Blue Book went from, you know, Project Sign and Project Grudge, and it may even have a different name now. There's rumors that Blue Book stopped, but that didn't mean that the investigation stopped.
I agree.
And they just may have changed the title to something, again, secret that we don't know about, which is quite possible. I think it'd be smart for them to continue. I've seen documents that show that the government still looks into this stuff, you know, but it just doesn't have an official title. But you're absolutely right. The funny thing to me about Wright-Patterson when it comes to this is you have the group of people that are doing the investigation about whether this stuff is real. And potentially, a few buildings down, you may have the people with the actual evidence of it being real. That is interesting to me, that it could all be in one, you know, one area. And no, not the left hand isn't washing the white right hand. That's the ironic thing about Blue Book. Blue Book was really a PR thing as opposed to actually an investigative thing. And Hynek, and the J. Allen Hynek, who was heading it up, was, you know, it really kind of convinced him that something did happen. And I think that's the best thing about all of this, is that you have somebody like Hynek seeing the Socorro, New Mexico case of 64 and realizing, wait a second, there's something to this. This can't be explained by something like swamp gas or, you know, whatever that they would say. So I wish Blue Book, and there's still, what, 700 cases that were never explained. So, fascinating stuff.
Well, for anybody who's never been to Socorro, let alone New Mexico, I have been through Socorro a couple of times, and it's out in the middle of a desert.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
Bone dry desert.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, even the soil when Lonnie Zamora had his sighting was so hard that even his own tracks weren't all that deep.
Yeah. In fact, I think actually Ted Phillips and his team was just down in Socorro back in March when we were doing the Aztec New Mexico thing. They took a day and went to the Socorro. I actually went through Socorro after last summer, and I happen to be, by coincidence, working on a TV show right now that I'm not producing, I'm just editing, but everything's being shot in Socorro, New Mexico. But it's nothing to do with UFOs, different subject altogether. But by coincidence, it's all. And if anybody's seen the movie Contact with Jodie Foster, with all those big antennas.
Oh, yeah, the VLA.
Yeah, exactly, the Very Large Array, which is right outside. It's basically Socorro, New Mexico. That's, you know, that's, I when I was there last summer, I decided, oh, heck, I'm gonna take a drive out there to see these things. Because you see them in movies and stuff all the time. I just thought, I really want to see these things. So I went out there and took some pictures of all. It's just amazing to look at, you know.
Well, when we went to the Roswell conference last year, we didn't even know it was there.
Really?
So we saw this sign saying VLA.
VLA, exactly.
You see,
like right out on the freeway, on the highway.
And you see all these big, they look like great big, huge, giant satellite dishes from a distance. But
yeah,
when you get closer and closer, you get an even more idea of how large things really are.
Yeah,
they're huge.
And there's
on the way back, we stopped and went through their visitor center. It was very interesting.
See, that's funny, because that's when I went there too. I didn't go to the visitor center, but it sounds like you and I are in Socorro at the same time, because I left Roswell and I took the long way around. I took the south way, as opposed to going north and west. I went west and then north. So I took the southern route, and sounds like we did about the same thing. Yeah. Socorro was great. I actually really wanted to look up Lonnie Zamora, because he's still alive, and I would love to talk to him. And if there's anybody out there I'd love to talk to about their sighting, would be him.
Oh, yeah.
He's got, And he doesn't talk to people anymore, from what I understand. I think the ridicule and the giggle factor just, you know, crushed him.
Along that line, what case and what researcher would you, is your dream case to dig into, sink your teeth into?
Socorro is on my top five. I think that that's you got a case, again, with a police officer, you've got physical evidence, you've got burn mark on the ground, you've got not only a witness of him, but you've got a witness of several people in a car that saw the ship also. You've got a case like that, you know, it was a sighting that was north of there, like a day or two later, way north in New Mexico. Fascinating stuff. I think that's a great case. I think the Cash Landrum, which we talked about before, is to me almost as good a case as you're going to get, because you have people with physical evidence on their body that something's going on, that they've had radiation poisoning. And in fact, is it Vicky? I'm trying to think which one died a few years ago.
I think it was Betty that died.
Betty must have just recently died then. Okay. Vicky died, I think, in 1998, I think it was. She died on the anniversary of the event. But, you know, you have people with hair falling out and cancer. You know, you've got physical trauma based on this. Well, how can you not want to look into that? You know, when you've got that much evidence, that to me is the kind of case I think deserves an entire hour at least on. And I wanted to do an hour on that. We really do. And I've heard that the show UFO Hunters is going to be doing this thing about Cash Landrum. But I've heard they also may not be using John Schuessler, who to me is he's the research. He's the guy of that. If you're going to talk to anybody, that would be the guy to talk to, because he wrote the book about it. He met with Betty and Vicky and Colby, the boy, just extensively. He got them first aid equipment. He, you know, basically brought that to everybody's attention. And so I don't see how you could do a show without at least wanting to talk to the man himself. You know, especially since
and Colby.
Yeah, I don't know if Colby's talking. I don't know. I would love to talk to him as well. I mean, the guy probably has some amazing things to say. And I've heard it still affects him to this day. But
last time I talked with Stan Friedman about the case, he said yes, he's still having problems.
Yeah.
Because of this incident.
Yeah, and again, you've got somebody who has gone through this kind of trauma. How can you not want to look into that? So when you hear, you know, skeptics out there, and as you know, there's tons of them, why would they not look into these kind of cases? Why would they not at least think, okay, this is worth investigating. There's so much to this. When you have physical evidence, you've got evidence on people, you've got evidence of the car. Some of the car melted. You know, the handprint and the dashboard. Okay, I'm open to finding more about this. You know, what's involved with this? I'd say those two cases are really intriguing. The Delphos, Kansas case we covered on another show, and you and I talked about that earlier, and Ted's talked about that. That's a great case. Langenberg, Saskatchewan, back in 1974, a guy named Edwin Furr, I think his name was, saw something, and there was physical evidence from that. There's a lot of cases, I think, that really are worth an entire book on. You know, even look how many books have been written about Roswell.
Oh, I'm seeing.
You know, exactly. And there's really not a lot of physical evidence from Roswell. You know, you have, it's all, you know, people talking. You have documents and things like that, but you don't have any sort of thing where you can actually say there's imprints here, there's metal here. You know, the stories of it existing, and you always hear somebody saying, oh, I know somebody who's got a piece. Okay, well, let's bring it out. Let's get it out there, and let's take a look at it. And if you've got that many books being written about a case that doesn't have the physical evidence, why can't you really focus on the case where there's actually forensic evidence that can be analyzed? And that, to me, is where ufology is heading, is taking the cases where there is real physical evidence and investigating that's to me the next phase of whether it's shows or just ufology in general, just investigating this stuff. And wouldn't you say that it seems to be that. Don't you think that's a natural place to go? With some of this stuff?
Oh yes, definitely.
Good. Yeah.
One of the other episodes that I really, really liked was UFO Hotspot.
Thank you. That was a fun one. That we talked about the Gulf Breeze in that
mm-hmm.
one, and that's an interesting case as well, because I don't know what to believe on the Gulf Breeze story. That's one I have to admit I'm intrigued with, but also a little skeptical of. So and what are your thoughts on Gulf Breeze?
I think there is some validity to Ed Walter's story.
Sure.
You know, because of how do I explain what I'm trying to spit out here? You know, the photos he took, and I'm talking after, you know, he was given the Panaflex camera.
The camera that couldn't be opened and things like that, right?
Right. I find it very difficult to believe that someone without, you know, very good training in photography would be able to fake those photos.
Yeah, no, I understand. I think that's accurate. You know, the hotspots thing is interesting because there are places around the world, whether it's Mexico City or Sao Paulo, Brazil, or wherever it be, that things seem to pop up quite a bit. And like we were talking, the case that Ted's working on, the Maury Woods, is that Maury Woods? I think it is. Things are happening there constantly. Why is it that certain things happen in certain areas? You know, people say, why do all so many cases happen in New Mexico? And I think that's interesting. Well, somebody explained to me that a lot of these cases happened during the time when we were testing atomic weapons, and that you have the atomic weapons base out there, and you
White Sands missile.
Right, exactly. White Sands. If you're going to be investigating, if you're going to be looking at a group, you know, let's say a race of aliens. And again, just saying that if you're going to be investigating somebody who's creating new technology, you would go to where the new technology is and look at it and watch it, and that would be where they would go. So I thought, okay, that's interesting. This is funny that. There's so many questions that have come up to me about UFOs and things like that. And one of them is, I get probably every three or four person that doesn't believe, why don't they just land on the White House lawn? I'm sure you've heard that question.
Oh, more times than I remember.
And I explain to people, if we were investigating a tribe of jungle people in the woods, in the forest, in the jungles of whatever country we go to, the Aborigine, you would not walk up to their fire with a camera and just start taking pictures of them. You would stand way off in the distance observing. Who's to say that somebody's not doing that with us? You know.
Oh, I agree.
You know, you wouldn't land on the White House lawn because you want to observe, you know, from a distance. And so you would back off as far as you can. And people say, well, how did they get here? That's the other question I hear. We've only been flying for about a little over 100 years. And we've already gone to the moon in that time. But our technology is still basically about the same technology we had with the Wright brothers when it comes to flight. We don't, you know, we use pretty much the same thing. Propellers, you know, some sort of thing to move us forward, and aerodynamics. We haven't really changed that too much. We're not, you know, we haven't done it. But imagine if some other race has been flying for 1,000 years or 1,000,000 years. Well, who's to say they haven't come up with something really so far advanced than we have, then we can't explain it. You know, I mean, if I took an HD TV and a DVD player back in time, you know, 200 years and showed somebody, they would, first off, not understand it. They'd think it's magic, and they'd probably burn me at the stake. You know, who's to say we're not seeing technology that we don't understand? And it just seems to not, you know, defy our laws of physics that we understand, but who's to say somebody hasn't gotten beyond the things that we, you know, way beyond what we can understand and comprehend? You know?
It's nice to meet a skeptic that thinks that way.
Well, it's only logical to me. I mean, I think to me, if you're going to be, you know, honest, open-minded skeptic, you have to accept that both sides have some validity. You know, I listen to some skeptics and go, okay, you've got a good point. But, you know, I listen to somebody like Phil Klass, who I think he was just one who wanted to argue and one who didn't want to agree, even if their evidence is overwhelming. And at times, UFO evidence can be overwhelming when it comes to proof. I think there's a number of things. A friend of mine who you've had on the show, Peter Robbins, had a quote to me that he said something like, there's enough evidence that you could take this to court and win. And it's absolutely true. You could potentially take the evidence that's there and take it to court and win the case. So, you know, Peter, by the way, is one of the great guys out there in ufology. If anybody gets a chance to look at his articles or listen to him speak, you know Peter.
Oh, yes. He's a sweetheart.
Yeah, he's and I know he's a friend of the show, and he's also a friend of mine, and I just can't say enough nice things about him. Just he's just a wealth of knowledge. I've been blessed in the fact that at times at certain conventions, he and I have gotten to have lunch together or just kind of walk around together. And one of the great things about going to these conventions is you do have time to really sit with somebody or just, you know, I mean, you went to Roswell last year, and you know, you're walking around and you see these people with booths, and you walk up and get to stand there and talk to Dr. Roger Lear for 10 minutes or, you know, whoever it is. And that's, you know, that's really pretty cool. You know, I mean, how many subjects can you, if you're a fan of music, how many times do you get to go to a rock convention and there's all the musicians and band members that you love that you could sit there and talk to them? Not very often. But with ufology, there's these guys are pretty open to meeting the people. And, you know, they're there to sell their books, but they're also there to meet more people and get more information. And I think that so much research gets done at these conventions where the people are meeting and making connections and saying, you know what, you should be on this show, or you should meet this person, or you should read this book, you know. At Roswell last year, I met Lloyd Pye, if you're familiar with Lloyd.
Oh, yes, yes. The
Star Trek.
Yeah, Star Trek. I could think of was the skull.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And
these are what they were calling the skull.
I got to spend an afternoon with him about a month ago. He was out here speaking at L.A. MUFON L.A. It was, you know, so we got to spend the afternoon together, and he's a good guy. He's got a lot of great information. His book's really fascinating. You know, I think that the Star Child skull should be looked into more, and I'm surprised it hasn't been.
You know? It's been a problem with getting money for the testing.
Yeah.
You know, these DNA tests aren't
right.
cheap. And, you know, I've got pictures that I took of the skull there at Roswell this last year.
Sure.
And I had my doubts about it, you know, just seeing photographs of it, and it just doesn't do it justice.
Right.
Without physically seeing it and walking around it and seeing the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know.
And Roswell was one of the first places it was out. I know that generally he brings the duplicate, the one that he made the model of it. But Roswell, they actually had it at the museum. They had the real skull there in the glass case. And that was kind of a kick. I mean, it was, you know, that was fun to see. You know,
and the skull of the woman that was found with the Star Child.
Right. Yeah. There's so much information about that. To me, you could again do an whole hour on DNA evidence involved with this. Whether it's taking somebody like Daryl Sims and some of the cases he's investigated, where there's actual, you know, evidence on the walls and things like that, to this, to you know, Dr. Roger Lear's implant, things out of the body. There's so much that can be done when it comes to just investigating things, how these things interact with humans and the physical effects on people and bodies. You know, again, you've got a subject like UFOs. You could almost do a TV show for years and never repeat things. That's what's interesting to me. And the fact that it's not done, it seems like half the shows out there about Roswell. And usually poorly too. They usually end up saying, "Well, it was probably the test dummies dropped, and that's it." You know, or it's probably Project Mogul, and they don't investigate anything further than that.
You know, one that I would like to see somebody do a real deep, in-depth story on, and it's not just on his sighting, but the other stuff he got involved in afterwards, and that's Kenneth Arnold.
Right, right. And some people are really skeptical about the Kenneth Arnold story. And some people are very much, you know, but if you look at how fast the ships were probably going, if you calculate that, you know, it's there's some definitely, and most people don't realize that's, you know, what he saw and when it happened, because this is, what, about a month or so before Roswell? Does it recall something like that?
No, it was just a month before Roswell.
Yeah, it was just a month. Yeah, yeah. And that, to me, again, okay, so you got a summer of 47, you've got a number of things happening there. That's interesting to me. You know, you got a lot of activity going on. So, yeah, that's a great story, the Kenneth Arnold thing. People don't quite know that one.
Okay, now my husband's been over here elbowing me about asking this.
Okay.
He would like to know about your latest program that you're working on.
Well, I can't tell you too much about it because we haven't gotten everything done, but it looks into more of the science of things. And it's kind of exciting. I hopefully have news about this real soon, and I will make sure that I tell you when there's direct news. But until everything's signed and everything, I don't want to. I'm not allowed to talk about it really. But the bottom line is, it really goes into the investigation part of it more deeply than I've seen done before, and I think that's where ufology should go. Is it really should go? Okay, we've heard the stories. Now let's figure out whether there's, and without, whether there's proof, without the silliness or, you know, the giggle factor that you see going on, how do I explain this? It's a serious, in-depth look at what exists, whether it's physical evidence, trace evidence, and things like that. That's really what I can tell you about it. But as soon as I can say more, I will definitely say more, because I'm dying to have people know about this.
So this is for UFO Files?
No, this is not. UFO Files, unfortunately, we have stopped making those because the network just decided that they didn't. They were creating these shows like one or two at a time and not doing very many of them. And unfortunately, they stopped doing them. And the network now is doing the UFO Hunters show. UFO Hunters, as I said, was based on the episode that John Greenwald and I wrote and produced, but we had nothing to do with this new show with Bill Burns. There were two companies that did UFO Files, the company I worked for, and there was another company that did other ones. They did episodes like the Pacific Triangle and a few things like that that I had nothing to do with because I wasn't working for that company. Well, that's the company that ended up doing the current UFO Hunter show. And when the History Channel started advertising it, they were saying based on the original hit special, UFO Hunters, which was the show we did. But and in fact, they advertised on their site, they had a picture when they were saying coming soon, UFO Hunters. And the photograph they had was a shot of my sister-in-law. Who was one of the actresses in one of our shows. I was like, well, that's kind of funny. They're using all of our stuff and even the pieces from our show to advertise their show coming up. But again, it's more flattering than anything, because it's like, well, they like the show enough and they like the way we did it enough to have done this. I wish, because we were also thinking about a show like this, but the company we work for never was able to sell something like that. So I give big kudos to the people that got it sold, and good luck with the show. I haven't really seen much of it. So.
Well, I think that's surprising that they aren't going to do any more UFO Files, because after UFO Hunters airs, they show an episode of UFO Files.
I know. And I thought that, to me, it's a logical thing to do a few more of those, but I'm actually proposing another whole series and not just a couple of specials for UFO Files. I'm actually... there's a series that I'm pushing that hopefully will be a weekly series of new episodes of investigating these kind of things and going back to these cases, whether they're old or new, and really looking at the evidence in a way that hasn't been looked at before. And I think Hunters is trying to do that right now. But the ones I've seen, I don't have anything to do with the show, so I really can't say. You know, I don't know what they're.
Oh, some of them I think are good.
Okay.
But a lot of them are fairly, in my opinion, kind of mediocre.
Okay.
Well, but then again, I'm no film critic.
No, you are, because anybody who watches TV can be a critic. And that's you know, and you do your critical analysis by watching a show or not watching a show. You know, so somebody who's watching, the thing is we always make our shows in a vacuum, and we never know what people think. And when I hear you tell me that you really liked some of the episodes we did for UFO Files, well, that makes me very happy, because I'm in a room by myself most of the time, editing this stuff, putting it out there, and hoping that people do like it. Now, I've had people like Frank Warren. I don't know if you're familiar with Frank. He's written many really wonderful reviews of some of the things we've done with UFO Files. In fact, he was the reason I ended up getting to speak in Aztec, because he was supposed to speak there, and he couldn't make it at the last minute, and asked if I could step in, and I said, absolutely. You know me, you don't know me, but get me talking and I'll shut up. So it was perfect for me, and so I'm very much indebted to Frank for his really sweet and nice comments about our shows, as well as trusting me to get up in front of a crowd and speak and not fall on my face.
How did that go? Were you nervous or scared?
I used to do stand-up comedy years ago. And,
oh, my.
So I got used to being on stage quite a while ago. I did stand-up comedy, started doing some of that when I was right around 18. And I've always been a bit of a ham bone. I like to get out there and do this stuff. My wife is exactly the opposite. She does not like speaking in front of crowds and never understands why I do this. But it went great. It went really fun. The people in Aztec were really very nice people. The stage, the people they had on stage, again, Ted Phillips, Stan Friedman, Tim Good, Scott Ramsey, Ken Storch, who you had on your show. There's a lot of great people up there that really know what they're talking about, and I kind of felt like I was out of my league, and these guys were so welcoming and so warm about everything and so complimentary to me. I was the first speaker of the convention, and so the joke was, if you screw this up, the rest of us are in trouble because you're going to make it bad for all of us. You know, and I was, you know, I was a little nervous, but it went fine. It went really well, and the people were great, and made a lot of great connections, and looking forward to doing more of these conventions, because you get a chance to really hear what people like and what they don't like. And one of the nice things to me was being able to explain the process about these shows. And I'll tell you a little bit about how these things are created. These things take months to do. I mean, we started doing the Hangar 18, we did Hangar 18 and the Alien Encounter show at the same time. We started them, I did some initial interviews in March of 1 year, and then in May we started, but we worked the entire summer getting these two shows done and delivered them right around October 1st. So it was basically May 1st to October 1st to get 2 hours of TV done. Well, our entire staff was basically John Greenwald and me. When we hired a few more people for a period of a few weeks here, somebody to answer phones there, somebody to help us cast some actors here and scout some locations. But for the most part, it was basically John and me who wrote, directed, produced, edited, whatever we had to do, you know, thrown in there doing this stuff. And the fact that we were able to get them done, you know, like that is great. But we had somebody asked me whether the network ever influenced us. Because, you know, you people say, oh, these things are all dictated by the networks. The networks won't let you say certain things. And I can tell you, as somebody who's been on the inside of these shows, I've never felt that. I've never had the network say, you know what, you're proving too much the UFO agenda, you can't do that. I've never had that. I think most of the time you hear, you see a show and it's really got a skeptical viewpoint, it's often the producers themselves who bring that to the table. It's not necessarily the networks that I've dealt with. You know, the History Channel was extremely open with us and gave us a lot of leeway when it came to the people we talked about, they never gave us the agenda of who we had to speak to. They never said, you must have a skeptic in here. You must disprove this. This must be your conclusion. And they read the script. They read an outline. They read the script. They see the show. They see a rough cut of the show. And they, again, never had anybody from the network ever say to us, don't do this. Don't expose this much information. So I don't think there's a conspiracy when it comes to the network saying we want just programs that show that the UFOs are fake. So
yeah,
I think that something like that's important to get out, that to understand that there are, you know, that the History Channel wanted good stories, and they wanted good stories that people don't know. And
well, I commend your work, because I mean the reason why I do what I do is to educate people on
right.
the topic.
Right.
And I think your work with UFO files and history files, I mean unsolved mysteries rather, and all the other UFO related projects that you've done and are continuing to do, help to further that.
Thank you.
So I commend you on that. And as a little giggle here, when you were mentioning hiring actors for to play the different
people
involved in the cases. I believe it was the Hangar 18, the Wright Patterson one, and I could be wrong, but there was one segment in there where it was showing a man at a desk in a dimly lit room.
Yes.
And I swear it was John.
John's been in a few of our shows. John's been in a few of our shows. He's been in the Alien Encounters show. He he played a minister in the one we did in Aurora, the Texas is Roswell.
I'm gonna have to watch that one again.
If you see that one on TV, take a look at. There's one shot that shows the people at the cemetery, the funeral, and the man conducting the thing is John Greenwald. The case we did from Warren, Minnesota, the Deputy Val Johnson. He played Deputy Val Johnson in that one because we were up there and we were like, well, I'm the guy with the camera, so I can't play this, and you physically look a little bit more like him, and you're going to be there when we get back, so why don't we shoot some stuff in the car while we're here? And we didn't even know we were going to do this, but they had an extra uniform, and they said, okay, sure. And so we just set up a light or two, put him in the car, and had him rub his eyes like he just woke up. You know, it's funny because I've ended up shooting things that get in the show for certain shots, like if we have to recreate an abduction or something like that. I've taken a smoke bomb out and put it, you know, in the street and had a car shine its light through it and have a friend stand in the smoke. Sometimes when you're doing a recreation, it doesn't have to be this big Hollywood thing. You may do something very small. We had a scene in the Texas Roswell thing where the wreckage goes down a well. Well, we built the well out of paper in my driveway. My wife and I did. And threw stuff down. So we didn't have a real well. And, you know, sometimes when you're doing these kind of shows, honestly, the thing that I have to explain to people is these shows are made with very little money. There's not a big budget on these shows. And for us to make them look, or anybody to make them look really good, it's not because of the budget, it's in spite of the budget. And that's the surprising thing, because there's some really amazing-looking shots, not just in our show, but other shows that you look at going, wow, this really looks nice. I don't know how they did this. Sometimes it's based on things I used to do when I was a kid. You know, when I had a camera and my friends in seventh grade, and we'd shake the camera to make it look like an earthquake, or throw a smoke bomb in water to make it look like it was boiling, or, you know, something like that. You learn a bunch of little tricks, and they all kind of came back to me when I get to do these shows, thinking, well, if I just do this, or put a shadow here, or put an angle here, I can hide the fact that we're, you know, next to a house, or whatever it is. You know, it's little tricks like that. But the bottom line is, if you're not telling a good story, nobody's going to pay attention regardless. You know, and that's, I think, the important thing about these shows is they have to be a story. And I look at them oftentimes as being like a case. And we're at court. And my job is to present the evidence in a case. And at the end, you could decide. And I will say at the end, you know, basically, here's the evidence. You make the decision. I don't want, somebody asked me whether I believe in this stuff, and my comment I say to people is, I don't want you to know whether I believe or not by watching my show. I don't want you to sit there going, oh my gosh, he's done a Michael Moore, you know, or whatever it is. I don't want people to say that. I want people to look and say, you know what, here's the compelling evidence, but I don't, he's not telling me what to think. And I want that. I don't want people, I've never seen a UFO in my life. I sometimes get a little envious of people that have, but I don't want people to watch my shows and think, oh my gosh, this guy's got an agenda, look what he does, you know.
Okay, we have about 2 minutes left. Okay. Anything coming out here doesn't necessarily have to be UFO related. Just a little plug here if you want on anything you've got coming up that's going to be aired here soon that we can all
There are some history. Yeah. I was looking at the history.com. There are coming up with two episodes. I know the UFO, the Hangar 18 episode I did, which we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. is airing on Monday, June 9th, and Tuesday, June 10th, at really inopportune times. But if people have TiVo, they can TiVo that. Or just go to history.com and take a look at the UFO Files episodes and see if there's any of the ones we had coming up. That's when I suggest, trying to think what else that would suggest when it comes to that stuff. I don't have anything else that I can really say. There's some shows I'm working on, but nothing involving UFOs and nothing that I know when it's going to air. Hopefully soon I'll have something finalized about the show I'm pushing about UFOs, which I think is really going to be something that's going to take off. I've been talking to a few people about that, and I promise you I will tell you as soon as I know more so you can talk about it. But that's
awesome.
Stuff. I think that really covers most everything, though. As you know, I don't like to shut up. I can talk all day.
Hey, that's fine with me. I'm the same way myself. I get to yakking, and I can't shut up.
Good.
And I've got a couple of things here I need to get talked about to our listeners. One of them is UpSnap. With UpSnap, you can now access the Paranormal Radio Network on your cell phone. Just text the word PARA, that's P-A-R-A, to 27627 on your mobile phone, or you can call 201-765-9737 to listen to UFO Paranormal on your radio, on your cell phone. And also to our new listeners in New Orleans on UPRN 105.8 FM, thank you for joining us tonight, and thank you, Duane, for joining us. I had a blast.
This is fun. This is a great time.
And we hope everybody comes back, and that's all the time we've got. We're out. I want to thank everyone for tuning in, and also thank all those who joined us in the Pal Talk Auditorium. Stay tuned for Voice of the People, hosted by November Hansen. Tonight, her guest will be author Bob Hieronymus. And also for my dear friend Peter Robbins, who is helping organize and coordinate the Roswell Conferences for 2008, please check out roswellmysteries.com/UFO. And join me again next Saturday on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network for another episode of Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis. Until then, keep an eye to the sky. Good night, everyone.